everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Thank you all for tuning in today. We appreciate all of the continued support. And we want to give a special thank you to two of our listeners, Pete and Jess. They both shared today's case with us. And it's an interesting case for a number of reasons, but one reason being that it takes place on the day of the Super Bowl in February 2020, which the Kansas City Chiefs won. And if you're new here, Sean and I live in Kansas City, so it was a memorable time for us.
Yeah, we're both huge Chiefs fans, and that was a really good day.
Yeah, and what's interesting also is it seems like a strange time for someone to disappear, and that's what we're talking about today. So with that, are you ready to get into it?
I am. Let's do it.
Mary Flynn, better known as Abby Flynn, was 59 years old at the time of her disappearance in 2020. Abby grew up with one brother in Gloucester, Massachusetts, a coastal city located on Cape Ann with a population just under 30,000. Abby went on to work as a nurse for Boston Children's Hospital, and it was here where she met a radiologist named Richard. Abby and Richard started a relationship that led to a lasting marriage, and they had three kids together. Eventually, they moved across the country to Houston, Texas, but they didn't cut ties with Gloucester, and at the time of Abby's disappearance, they owned properties in both Houston and Gloucester. They split time between the two cities. And if you aren't familiar with U.S. geography, Texas and Massachusetts are quite the distance away from each other. In fact, it would take over a day to make that drive. Abby was retired when she disappeared, so she had more time to visit Gloucester than Richard did. Abby was often there alone when she visited their home, since two of their children were away at college and one lived in New York. However, she had friends from the area and made friends with people in the neighborhood, and her dog, who was a pug, kept her company as well. Abby's brothers described her as a selfless and caring mother, friend, and sister who would do anything for those she loved. Likewise, she had a large number of people in her life who loved her dearly. Abby is also depicted as being really happy. There were no known issues in her life, at least that have been revealed publicly. Abby's known as an avid hiker and a wildlife enthusiast, and she also had a love for photography, and that paired well with her interest in wildlife. When researching the case, I found some pictures posted on social media that Abby was in, and there were a couple of pictures where she had a camera hanging around her neck, so I was hoping to find some of her work, but sadly, I was unable to. Besides photography, Abby enjoyed cooking and baking, and based on her Pinterest page, she seemed to be interested in needlework, interior decorating, hand weaving, gardening, and reading. The reading category of her Pinterest page was interesting because it showed she clearly had an interest in the history of Gloucester, as most of the books saved were about Gloucester. I'm sure she read books about other subjects, but she clearly had that specific interest. Abby and Richard's home in Gloucester was near the ocean, and although there are quite a few homes in their neighborhood, it still appears to have a sort of private feel to it. There are a large number of trees in the area, dense brush and foliage, and many of the homes are set kind of a little back off the main roads, which I think kind of helps with that private feel, or the impression I got was that there was some privacy there. And you don't just stumble upon it. That's something I've heard from people who are much more familiar with this area than I am. It's not an area you really just would come upon. You kind of have to know where you're going to get to it. And when I looked around the area, I could see why Abby loved it. And I got the impression that it would offer an abundance of opportunities for Abby to use her photography skills, even just within the neighborhood.
So how much time are they splitting between Houston and Gloucester?
I'm not exactly sure, but it seemed like Abby spent a lot more time in Gloucester than Richard did, because Richard was still working as a radiologist in Houston, so he probably didn't make it there as much. But since Abby was retired, she had more time to be there.
Okay, so they're not traveling at the same time back and forth whenever they go.
Right. I mean, I'm sure they had some trips where they went together, but for the most part, right, they weren't together. Unfortunately, I was not able to access as much of this area where she lived or where they owned the home through Google Earth Street View feature as I would like. So I had to rely on pictures, but you'll understand why I'm saying that's unfortunate a little bit later. Sunday, February 2nd, 2020 was an overcast day in Gloucester. Temperatures range from 37 to 42 degrees Fahrenheit or between about 3 and 6 degrees Celsius. As I said in the beginning, on this day, the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers were set to play in the National Football League's 54th Super Bowl. But this was also an interesting time because it was right before the pandemic. Abby was alone with her dog at her home in Gloucester, but she was hosting a Super Bowl gathering with several friends that evening. Abby spoke with her son on the phone around 4 p.m., and she told him that she was thinking about going on a walk before her guests arrived. Since the Super Bowl was scheduled to start at 6:30 p.m., and her guests were set to arrive a little earlier than that, and the sun was about to set around 5 p.m., I suspect that if she did go on a walk, it was shortly after that phone call. Abby was known to take walks in the area, and she often brought her camera along. To be clear, though, in this case, I've seen it reported at times that she went for a walk as if we know that as fact, but we don't. I think the assumption makes sense because she said she might go for a walk, but I wanted to be sure to acknowledge that we don't have clear evidence that Abby actually went for a walk. And I've seen in discussions about this case online that some people think this is a weird time for Abby to be going on a walk.
Yeah, I don't really think it's that odd for her to go on a walk at this time. I mean, she's about to watch the Super Bowl, which is a 4 to 5 hour event, you know, with the game. And, you know, they take a bunch of commercial breaks, obviously, and then the halftime show. It's a long time to be sitting on the couch and watching the event. I would want to do something active before I sit my butt down on the couch and watch football for a while. So,
yeah.
And I mean, she's used to the weather up there. You said it was around upper 30s, low 40s. That's not crazy, assuming she's, you know, she's acclimated to that type of climate up there. So I guess bottom line, I don't think it would be that odd to go on a walk.
Yeah, I thought it was a little odd at first, but then the more I thought about it, I didn't think it was that strange. And something I haven't mentioned yet is that she actually had most of the prep work done for the party. So it's not like she was going to be scrambling until the last minute to prepare everything. She pretty much had most of it done. And when the weather is discussed on this day, people seem to point out that it was kind of nice. Like, relatively speaking, if you look at years prior, this day on years prior, it was typically colder than it was in 2020. So I guess, relatively speaking, it probably was a decent weather day for early February. So on the surface, yeah, it seems a little strange. But even if it is strange to people, I don't really know what difference it makes in the context of this case. That, you know, this is what she told her son. At approximately 6 p.m., two of Abby's guests arrived, only to discover that she was not at home, which left them puzzled. Why would Abby, the host, not be at her own party? They noticed the oven was not on, but it was still warm. There were cookies sitting out, pizza dough rising on the stovetop, and Abby's dog was inside the home. They had no way of contacting Abby because her cell phone was inside the house as well. Once they realized that something was deeply wrong with the scene and Abby still hadn't shown up, they called the police.
So they were just able to let themselves in, like the door was unlocked?
That's how it appears, yes. And we'll get into it more, but the police chief, when asked specifically about the door being unlocked, he didn't really want to address it, although he's open about pretty much everything else. But I have to assume that if the friends were able to come upon this scene, that, yeah, the front door was unlocked. I don't think it's that weird for someone to leave their doors unlocked and a neighborhood where they feel safe. I wouldn't do it, but I really don't think it's that unusual. When Gloucester police arrived at Abby's home, they treated her disappearance as any family member of a missing person would hope the police would treat their loved one's case. there was a sense of urgency from the beginning, and about 80 officers began to search the area around 8 p.m. on the day Abby went missing. Extensive searches were conducted on foot, tracing the paths in the area and combing through brush. Thorough searches of the coastline were conducted as well. Helicopters with thermal imaging technology were used, drones were brought in, 20 K-9 units were deployed, and the U.S. Coast Guard was brought in to search the water off Brace Cove because Abby was known to frequent this area as it's just a few minutes away from her home. You could walk to it in just a few minutes. High tide was at 5:23 p.m. on the day Abby went missing, and there was concern that Abby could have been swept away by the water. The area that Abby likely would have been in wasn't surrounded by cliffs, but there are a lot of rocks. Part of the coastline or parts of the coastline are pretty rocky, and there was a possibility that if Abby were walking along the uneven rocks for some reason, they could have been slippery and caused her to fall into the water. But we'll get into this more when we get into theories. The initial search was hindered to an extent by the darkness, and it was called off at 3:30 a.m. The following day, the police went back to search and received additional assistance from the Gloucester Fire Department, Mass State Police, Mass Environmental Police, Gloucester Harbormaster, Rockport Harbormaster, and the Northeastern Massachusetts Law Enforcement Council. Part of the reason the search efforts were so expansive is because of the last group I mentioned, also known as NIMLEC, and this agency was doing canine training nearby at the time of Abby's disappearance. So instead of doing the training at their original location, they switched the area that was being searched for Abby so they could be of assistance. So this was an additional resource that likely wouldn't have been involved if it weren't for this coincidence. So you really couldn't ask for more resources or agencies to be involved. And the response was impressive. Massachusetts State Police brought a dive team in along with a sonar-equipped boat, but they did not find Abby or any trace of her, such as an article of clothing or a shoe.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking how extensive the group of people trying to find Abby is. It's only been like 4 hours since she last was in contact with someone that, you know, it's good to hear. It just... It's a little staggering to see how many different divisions and groups of people are assisting, you know, already.
Yes, and how they were able to get organized so quickly, all these different agencies coming together. That was part of what surprised me too, was just the sheer number of entities that were involved in the search. And I have to assume it's because, well, for a few reasons. I think it's because she should have been at home, right? She had plans. She had clear plans to have a Super Bowl party. It's not like a neighbor swung by to visit Abby and she wasn't home and they started this massive search for her. She had plans that day. So I think the first concern was that because she did tell her son she was possibly going to go on a walk, that maybe she had some sort of medical episode, a heart attack or something that rendered her unconscious, like it was some sort of accident. I think that's what they were trying to figure out and hopefully find her alive, just needing medical attention.
I find it somewhat interesting that she didn't bring her phone with her, you know, in the event that something would happen, that she needed to call someone or text someone.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I mean, although I suppose if she goes on these walks, maybe she likes to, you know, in a sense, be unplugged, not bring her phone with her and just be out there taking a walk in nature.
Yeah, she probably wouldn't be using her phone. And I can tell you that her family has said that it wasn't unusual for her to leave her phone behind when she went out on a walk. So at least that's good to know. I think it would be stranger if Abby always brought her phone with her on a walk to find the phone at home, but we can at least say that this was not atypical. As soon as Abby's husband, Richard, learned the news, he booked a flight to get to Gloucester immediately. Her brother booked a flight the following morning, and I imagine the rest of Abby's family got there as soon as they could. Abby's brother explained that they were in shock in the beginning, and they were all just heartbroken and confused. I don't have much else to share about the family's response because they have elected to remain private about Abby's case, which I respect. I wanted to point it out, though, so you're not wondering why, as we continue, I'm not sharing more about how they felt or what they said or how they reacted and so on. On February 4th, about 2 days after Abby disappeared, the large-scale ground and water searches were suspended because police felt their search was exhaustive. But despite all efforts, there was still no sign of Abby. Although the larger efforts were suspended, Gloucester police officers planned to continue to canvass the area with canine units for the next several days. Gloucester Police Chief Ed Conley shared with reporters early on in the investigation, quote, "Right now, there's no indication of foul play. We're working primarily under the theory that she did what she said she was going to do, which was take a walk, and perhaps either got lost or had a medical incident or something that rendered her incapacitated," end quote. I think since they were operating under the idea that Abby needed help or medical assistance, like I said before, that kind of explains this immediate widespread response because time would be so vital in a situation where, for example, Abby had a sudden medical event and needed help. 4 days after Abby disappeared, Chief Conley participated in an interview with the Good Morning Gloucester podcast where he discussed the case and answered questions about Abby's disappearance live. The interview was connected to Facebook Live, so people were able to submit questions through there. This was a really helpful resource because Chief Conley answered a number of questions that I'd been wondering about, and he was very open about most things. I know I mentioned early on about the door being unlocked. He didn't really want to address that, but pretty much every question seemed like fair game. He wasn't holding a lot back. So that was, from a researcher's perspective, that was really nice to have. Chief Conley indicated that there were zero signs of a struggle or a disturbance in Abby's home. They had no reason to believe that anyone had been in the home other than Abby that day. Because of this and other factors, he indicated that the probability was very low that someone came into Abby's home and abducted her. He shared this with Abby's family, too. There was nothing missing from the home either that anyone noticed. He addressed reports of three separate white vans that were seen by people in the neighborhood on the day Abby disappeared. Chief Conley indicated that two of the white vans were identified immediately. One was a florist who was in the area, and another was someone who was turning around in a driveway after going the wrong direction. The third van was seen near Niles Pond, which is just a short walk away from Abby's home. Chief Conley said that they determined who the driver was as well. I think it was important for him to express this because people in the community were concerned. They didn't know if they needed to be worried about their own safety. And these white van sightings are interesting because it tells us that people in this community pay attention. And it seems like there's a decent chance that if someone abducted Abby, someone in the community might have seen something, although there's no guarantee that they would. And at the same time, no one saw Abby on a walk that day. Chief Conley confirmed that Abby's dog was found inside the home unharmed. And again, with this, some people have thought it was strange that Abby wouldn't bring her dog with her, but we don't know how old her dog was, or maybe her dog just didn't like the cold. Could be any number of reasons.
Yeah, or I mean, she could have taken her dog on a walk earlier that day. So about the scent dogs, were they able to pick up on Abby's scent along the path or anywhere outside?
So Chief Conley was asked about this as well. And when he was asked if Abby's scent was ever picked up by the canine units, he quickly said no and explained that the dogs got two hits on blood, but both spots were established as animal blood. Now, he doesn't explicitly say that Abby's scent was never found, but his response, the quick no, I guess that is saying, yeah, they didn't pick Abby's scent up. I find that interesting. I mean, if she went for a walk, I would think the dogs would find her scent somewhere. However, this is like the fourth or fifth disappearance where we've discussed live scent dogs, and we found that they don't always detect scents, but we have to question if that's because there isn't one there to detect of the victim, or if there are other factors at play, such as the environmental conditions. During the interview, a question was asked, and I think the way the question was asked was confusing. The interviewer was reading from a question someone submitted through Facebook, and he said, quote, "This person says, and you can dispel this rumor or not, a rumor that a dog can only pick up a scent to the end of a driveway. So is it possible she could have gotten into a car and gone someplace?" End quote. I think the better way to ask this question is, did a scent dog pick up Abby's scent until the end of the driveway? And I'm not blaming the host. It was just how this person phrased the question. And Chief Conley said that Abby getting in a car wasn't very probable because that would imply foul play being involved. So it seemed like he was more so addressing the possibility that Abby was picked up by someone at the end of the driveway, not that the dogs actually tracked her scent to the end of the driveway. Every other indication from him was that the dogs never tracked her scent. So if I understand correctly, just because he didn't say, no, that's not true, he wasn't confirming that this rumor was true.
So Abby didn't have any other phone calls or texts or anything after her call with her son? That was basically the last contact she had with someone?
Right. She didn't have contact with anyone else after that phone call with her son.
So no one would have called her and said, hey, I'm going to pick you up. Let's go to the store real quick.
Right, right. And they did do a forensic analysis, or at least at the time of the interview, a forensic analysis of Abby's phone was in progress, but we don't know the results of that. I don't really see why they would follow up with that anyway, but I think they did in the beginning, just a quick check of her activity that day, and there was nothing after her phone call with her son. Another question I was glad to hear answered was around Abby's camera equipment. People wanted to know if any of Abby's cameras were missing from the home, and police learned from the family that she had two cameras that they knew of, and they were both in the home. They said, of course, it's possible that there could have been a camera, maybe a small handheld one that they didn't know about, but at least we can confirm that the cameras she usually used were still in the home, reducing the likelihood that she set out to take pictures that day. If she went on a walk, it was most likely for the purpose of walking, not photography.
Did any of the neighbors have the Ring doorbells with the camera that the police could have used to see if she was on the walk, if she crossed by the path of the camera?
No, unfortunately not. Abby was never caught on any type of security footage from around the neighborhood. There was one woman who was seen on someone's camera footage, but they didn't believe it matched Abby's description.
Would that person have been on the same path that Abby took?
I don't know if it was the exact path Abby would have taken. I guess we don't even know what path she would have taken exactly. She mentioned walking on Farrington Avenue, which is, you know, right by her home. So, but I wasn't like 100% clear on where this person was picked up on footage. But good question. I mean, if we think it's a likely route that Abby would have taken, right? Then if this person was caught on camera, then she should have been too. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. If this other person was on the same path she was on, then the camera would have been able to see Abby on her walk.
Yeah, that's what you would think. And also, there's a possibility that if it, you know, were the right time, maybe that person would have seen Abby out. But ultimately, I don't know where that went. There wasn't much else about that. But I think it was established that it was most likely not Abby on that person's footage. It's just so disappointing because in 2020, you know, we were really counting on this kind of evidence. And in this case, there's just a complete lack of evidence that you would hope for in this recent of a case. Throughout my research, I often came across a story of two friends who drowned after slipping into the ocean in Gloucester. 46-year-old Evelyn Howe lived in Gloucester, and she was visited by her friend David and his wife Kristen in May 2013. They went on a walk together along the rocky coastline when suddenly David fell into the 50-degree Brace Cove water. Evelyn jumped in after him in an attempt to save him, but sadly, she was unable to. And Kristen, David's wife, called the police. About 40 minutes after they went into the water, their bodies were recovered. I bring this up because it shows that this is a possible incident that could occur, although in the case of Evelyn and David, they were found. But I suppose that could be because only 40 minutes passed since they went into the water and Kristen was able to tell the police exactly where they went in.
Man, that'd be just terrible to witness something like that.
I know, and an excruciating way to die. But then for Kristen, David's wife, to watch and know that there's nothing she can do in that moment besides call for help, because if she jumps in, then the same thing could happen to her. Like, that just had to be terrible. Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it just goes to show how treacherous this coastline is.
Yeah, some choppy water.
Yeah, like Kristen saw the two people fall in and she couldn't do anything. And, you know, obviously they met their demise. But in Abby's case, she would have been alone and she couldn't have done anything.
I know. Yeah. And that's the first theory. Let's get into theories here. So, well, that's part of the first theory, I think. So there's a possibility that Abby suffered from a medical episode or some kind of accident that led to her death. Both of these options could involve the water. And from what I've learned through my research, I think it's highly likely that the water was a factor if either option is correct. And the reason I say that is because the thermal imaging equipment was utilized within just a couple of hours after police were notified that Abby was missing. And Chief Conley indicated that this would have been within a reasonable time for a heat signature to be detected if she were still on land. Yet that was never detected, leading me, and I believe others believe this as well, that if Abby was the victim of an accident, she's not on land or on a trail anywhere in that area. And the most probable scenario is she was submerged in the water and unable to escape, hence why there was quite literally no trace of her found in the area through extensive searching. The biggest issue I have with this theory is that Abby was familiar with the area. She knew what she was doing. She often walked around this neighborhood. She seems like an unlikely victim to the water. But some people have theorized that since Abby's into photography, maybe she scaled the rocks to get a picture and slipped and fell in at that point. But we already know most, if not all, of her camera equipment was at home, making this an unlikely theory. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be Brace Cove where she may have entered the water. Niles Beach was close by, although this beach doesn't seem to have many rocks, so probably not super likely. And there are various other points to get to the water. I mean, she lived on a cape, so there are a number of possibilities here. Although searches of the water, including the use of divers, turned up no signs of Abby, it is possible that she wouldn't be found. And if she did end up on the water, at this point, she may never be found, but it's possible that a bone could wash up to a shore somewhere, as morbid as that is. The other issue I have with the theory is that Abby was never caught on any neighborhood security cameras or Ring doorbells, and no one saw her walking that day. You'd think maybe if she walked to Brace Cove or walked, you know, anywhere, there might be an inkling of that, but there was not.
Yeah, you mentioned that some people thought it was strange that she would take a walk on that day. I mean, that would make it more memorable for her neighbors to see someone on a walk if, you know, they also thought it was strange that someone was going on a walk. They would remember that, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. It would be more easily cemented in their memory.
So with that said, if she did go on the walk, I don't think she would be walking
just through the neighborhood. Because someone would remember that. I think she would be walking along the coastline, which kind of gives credence to maybe she potentially did fall in.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to remember, I mentioned earlier that Brace Cove was really close to Abby's home. I mean, it was just a few minutes to get there. So in a scenario like you're talking about where she just wants to walk along the water, all she has to do is walk from her house to that area in a few minutes, as I'm saying. And it's not that hard to believe in that scenario how she could have gone unseen. And I suppose there might have been fewer people out at that time. They could have been preparing for the Super Bowl in their own home, or maybe they had already left to go watch it somewhere else. So there could have just been fewer people around to witness Abby walking. And if she was known to walk often anyway, maybe it would be harder to remember if someone did see her. You know what I mean? Thinking, well, did I see her on Sunday or was that Saturday? Like, it could be easy to mix that up potentially. The second theory is that Abby died by suicide. There's no evidence to support this, and I have a similar response as I did to the prior theory. If she were still in the area that was searched, she very likely would have been found. Therefore, suicide by drowning is probably what we're looking at. But according to a study titled Suicide by Drowning, a 20-year study, quote, suicidal drownings reportedly account for 2.8 to 8.9% of all suicides in regions with easy access to water, end quote. I think it's important to note the easy access to water component, because if you looked at the rate for the entire US, it's a bit lower. Still, it's not a very common method of suicide, and most people use weighted objects, which further makes me believe Abby would have been found by divers. Additionally, there's no evidence that we know of that Abby had any suicidal ideations. I did have one morbid thought, though, that although the timing of it might seem strange, Abby was alone in Gloucester except for her dog. If she harmed herself, then her dog would be alone. But if she did it when she knew people would be visiting, then her dog would be cared for and found right away. But I quickly shot that down by thinking, surely she was in contact with at least one family member on a daily basis. So I think someone would have noticed if she wasn't responding to messages or calls.
Yeah, I don't really buy into that theory. I mean, if she walked somewhere to do it, then she would have been found. Her car was there, or I'm assuming her car was there, right?
Yes, her car was there.
So if she didn't drive, then she would have to have someone pick her up to drive her somewhere. And I don't think anyone's going to assist in doing that. I mean, she probably wouldn't tell them what she's doing. She could have just said, hey, drive me over here. Wherever, but I just don't really buy into that one.
Then you would think that person would come forward and say, yeah, I gave her a ride somewhere.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I think this theory is unlikely, but at the same time, there's nothing we can rule out. The final theory, which seems to be largely dismissed by law enforcement, relates to foul play. Some have even tried to draw a connection between Abby's disappearance to other disappearances in the general area, but Chief Conley has said, quote, there's absolutely zero connection with any other missing person at all. Zero, end quote. And the possible connection has largely been regarded as rumors and speculation. And the mayor at the time even addressed the situation, saying that at that time, they were nothing but a city of rumor mills. As far as I could find, most of the other quote unquote missing women from the area were found dead, and in most incidents, foul play was not suspected. This tells us that at least some of these women died by suicide, therefore the media isn't going to be reporting much about it out of respect for the families, but maybe that silence caused people to grow concerned. I suppose there is a possibility that Abby left her home that day for a walk, or someone came to her front door and got her out of her home. If this is the case, I believe they got her out of the area very quickly.
Now, I don't think you mentioned like her stature. Was she someone who would have been an easy victim for an abduction, I guess is the way I want to put that?
I would say no. So Abby is 5'5 and about 200 pounds. So I feel like that wouldn't be someone who would be an easy target necessarily.
She seems like a difficult person to abduct.
She seems like she would fight back too, and it would cause a scene, and maybe someone would have seen something. It just doesn't seem like she would go quietly.
Yeah, I don't really buy into this theory either, just like the suicide theory. It just seems like it'd be a difficult abduction to me.
Yeah, I guess the only thing at all really that makes me think it's possible is the fact that there's no evidence that she went on a walk. And if she didn't go on a walk, then this is way stranger. Then we can't see this as an accident if she never left her home, you know? So that's the only thing that makes me a little suspicious. But yeah, there's really not much evidence to support the foul play theory. And we don't know of any enemies Abby would have had or anyone who would have wanted to harm her. There's nothing like that out there.
Yeah. I mean, we're pretty sure she went on a walk though, because she had the clear intention of going on a walk. She just told her son.
Yeah. She told her son, I might go on a walk. Okay. Then her friends show up and she's not in the home. Okay. She most likely went on a walk. And I called foul play the final theory. I suppose Abby could have set up her own disappearance, but I really don't know where to go with that. That timing would make no sense to set off on a new journey. If you wanted to start a new life, why would you do it when people are going to show up to your house and immediately know you're missing? Unless, again, it was for the dog's sake. But I just, there's no evidence to support anything in this case. So I want to hear from our listeners on what they think happened to Abby and the two people who sent this case to us. If you have theories, let us know. There have been very few updates about Abby's disappearance since 2020, and there have been no sightings of her. My heart goes out to Abby's family. She seems like she was such a positive light in their life, so I can't imagine what it's been like for the past almost 4 years now without her. And like I said about her family, they have been pretty private for the most part. And I think the most likely explanation for that would be that they have come to a sort of conclusion on their own as to what they think happened. And it doesn't involve foul play. I think if they truly believed that there was foul play involved, they would probably be a little more vocal. But of course, we can't say with any certainty, you know, what their position is in this case. Abby is described as a white female standing at about 5'5" and weighing about 200 pounds with brown hair. Abby's case is still considered an open investigation. If you have any information about her disappearance, please contact the Gloucester Police Department at 978-283-1212. Thank you all for joining us for this case. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. We would really appreciate it. And don't forget that you can send us case requests via email at keytothecase@gmail.com. And you can find us on Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast. That's all for today, but we'll be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.